Eventually, every storm runs out of rain. No matter how heavy it feels right now, every storm runs out of rain. And this will pass. And these things tend to hit like waves. And when we're in the crash of the wave, it feels like it's never going to end. And hopefully this can be your reminder in this moment that it does. And out of the depths of it all, you'll emerge again and it'll be this beautiful, clear blue sky day. And the ocean will be smooth as anything. And you'll even become almost disillusioned to the fact that there ever was a storm.
Wenn du spürst, dass es Zeit ist, innezuhalten, Altes loszulassen und dich neu auszurichten, dann ist mein Soul Vision Ritual genau das Richtige für dich. In diesem 2,5-stündigen Workshop führe ich dich durch einen klaren Visionsprozess mit Embodiment-Übungen, Meditation, Journaling und heiligen Ritualen. Ideal für den Jahresanfang, den Frühling oder jeden Moment, in dem du innere Klarheit brauchst. Du blickst auf das Vergangene, öffnest Raum für das Neue und richtest dich bewusst aus auf den nächsten Zyklus deines Lebens. Dazu bekommst du ein umfangreiches 30-seitiges Workbook mit inspirierenden Reflexionsfragen. Das Ritual basiert auf vielen Jahren meiner eigenen Visionsarbeit und schenkt dir Klarheit, Fokus und bewusste Ausrichtung mit deinem Seelenweg. Wenn du bereit bist, klar zu wählen, wie du weitergehst, findest du das Soul Vision Ritual über den Link in den Shownotes.
Hi everyone and welcome to a brand new episode of Remember Who You Are. And as you can hear, this is an English speaking episode. And this is a good reason, or for a good reason, because I'm really happy to welcome a truly inspiring guest today, right from New York, Amber Lyon, to the podcast. And for the ones who never heard about Amber, here's a little introduction. Amber is the founder of Modern Mind, a leading wellness platform. She's a magnetic mindset coach and the internationally published author of You Are a Magnet, a groundbreaking book on how to live a truly magnetic life. Now translated into 5 languages. Wow. Originally from New Zealand and now based in New York, Amber has worked with hundreds of clients around the world, helping them to create real alignment between their visions and actions and giving them practical tools to bring their personal and professional dreams to life. I can't wait to dive into her story, her wisdom, and the power of living with a magnetic mindset. Welcome, Amber.
Thank you so much for having me. So happy to be here and so happy to connect.
Where do we meet you right now, Amber? I already know you are in New York. What have you done today? Where are you coming from into this interview?
Oh, I love that, you know, because it's always different time zones, different timeline. Yeah. It's, you know, first thing in the morning in New York City, beautiful gray day outside right now. I've actually just come back from 3 weeks in my home country, New Zealand, which is where I'm from originally. I've been living in New York for about 7 or so years now. So there's sort of a split time element, but I'm really, New York is my new home. And as much as I miss my Kiwi roots, Kiwi is sort of a playful name we use for us New Zealanders. There's something about living in New York City that, I mean, I dreamed of for so long. It was, I had a picture of the Empire State Building, actually, funnily enough, I had a picture of the Empire State Building in my little study when I was growing up. And I used to say to myself, you know, one day. Mm. And actually now just in speaking with you, I've just set up my new office and we just moved apartments and I'm looking at the Empire State Building through my window. So it's a pretty timely kind of moment to have that recognition based on the conversation we'll be having today on, you know, creating your life and how you can do that. So yeah, it's a nice moment to even acknowledge that because I haven't actually put those two sort of moments together yet.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing this personal manifestation that you brought to life, like living across the Empire State Building. What a beautiful example of the principles you also share in your teachings and in your book that we want to talk about today. You work as a mindset coach and author, but your personal story also includes a period of significant anxiety and inner struggles. How did you move from that place into building a life of alignment with your vision? How did you get here?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I feel like when you've been through difficult times and suddenly you're out the other side, it's really easy to forget. Almost feels like it was another life, a past life. So I always loved these opportunities and a conversation like this and connecting to revisit that and be reminded of, oh God, wow, we have come a while. You know, it's been a journey, that's for sure. So I think if I go back, way back, to what really planted the seed of wanting to help other people, of wanting to really serve the world, was really seeing in my own home just so much pain and disempowerment. I think I couldn't use the word disempowerment at the time because I didn't have that toolkit at my disposal. But when I look back on it now, I can see that so clearly. There was a lot of addiction in my family. My father was addicted to methamphetamine, and there was a lot of, you know, abuse between my mother and my father as a result of that, and sort of feeling caught in the middle of this hurricane as a child, and not knowing really what's normal, what's not normal, but just having this unsettling feeling of, well, it can't be this. Surely there's more than, you know, this experience of feeling like I'm just floating and there's no sense of control. There's no sense of security. There's no sense of stability. We were always moving homes, and it's no discredit to my mother, who I love and adore and did the best that, you know, she possibly could to create a safe environment for us. But when you see someone you love in the depths of addiction, it's almost this downward spiral that no one can intervene or help with. And it's, you know, they're on their own journey. And there's a feeling of almost victimization as a result of that. And I think I took a lot of that into my early 20s, even when I left that environment of feeling like I was a victim of my life. And, you know, perhaps it wasn't my father that was that source anymore. Perhaps it was the person I was dating, right? Or the job that I was doing that I didn't enjoy, but I was just, you know, kind of just in the motions of my life. And it wasn't really until I started incorporating the tools of meditation and, thank goodness, following the work of leaders out in the self-development space, that I started to see, to believe that more was possible. And I think we all, the spiritual journey to me is really remembering our power, remembering who we are, right? The name of this podcast is so, you know, powerful for that reason. Remembering the power we have to create something different to what we've experienced. And so that's the, I suppose, pillar of all the work that I do now, is to remind people that just because you haven't had an experience yet doesn't mean that it's not possible for you. And I'm curious, you know, even just to kind of flip that question back on you, did you have, you know, your own journey coming, finding your way to this podcast, and what brought you into that space? Because I feel like it's almost always led from a way of having an experience and wanting to lead people out of that same experience.
Yeah, most definitely. I can really relate what you were saying about feeling like a victim, because I think for me personally, that was one of the biggest awakening moments of my life, when I realized through a major breakup with the love of my life, I thought so back then, that I'm not the victim, you know, and I chose this person for a reason, and I chose this really destructive relationship for a reason. And so for me, that was one of the biggest moments where I felt like I'm taking my power back. Mm-hmm. So as you were speaking about, I was also really curious about, was there a certain moment in your life where you were like, it's enough. I am in charge. Like, I have the power to create the life I want to create.
I wish I could pinpoint it to one single moment, mm-hmm. but I think it was really the compounding effect of those sort of cry on the floor afternoons, you know, when something doesn't work out, the relationship, the work project that I was working on, you know, sort of the, I have a background in modeling, and having that just constantly reaffirm limiting beliefs in so many ways, or using it to reaffirm limiting beliefs. If I didn't get the job or the agency didn't sign, and the ways in which it was so easy for me to just buy into this really limiting story of you're not enough, you're never going to be enough. Mm-hmm. And I think just the compounding effect of that over and over and over again, really, I always like to see triggers as knocks at the door. And every single one of those situations was a knock at the door. And it was either a reason to stay inside, or it was a reason to open it up and see that there was something beyond the room that I had placed myself in. And it just got to the point where over time, I started to expose myself to people living in a different way, to what I refer to in the book as vision holders, right? That these inspiring characters that, okay, well, they came from a difficult situation and they've built something different, so maybe I can too. And it just almost like a match sparked this possibility of something different. And little by little, little by little, I started showing up in new ways and seeing new outcomes follow. And I think really my journey has been this sort of evolution of allowing those more positive moments to compound now until they've become my belief system, sort of that bedrock of who I am. And I wish I could say that it happened overnight, but it didn't. It was a result of these uncomfortable, awkward new decisions that broke through those old beliefs, those old limiting stories, and allowed me to see that there was room for something more. So I do wish there was that one moment where it just struck me like lightning and, you know, forever I was removed or reprieved of those past patterns, but it really wasn't a cumulative affair.
Yeah. No, for sure. I think sometimes we have this enlightening moments, but most of the time it's definitely a process, this awakening journey. As an author myself, I feel like topics often choose us. I was just recently also reading another book that books are like entities, you know, and it's not so much onto us to choose if we want to bring them into the world. It's just like we have to say yes, like, you know, and I feel like, why did you feel like this book needs to be born? Like, what was the initial spark or life experience that brought you to writing a book called You Are a Magnet?
No, it's funny. Was the book Big Magic by any chance or no?
No, it was actually Cosmic Bonds.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so there's, you know, I suppose a few people that are talking about that. Ideas are permeating sort of in the ether. And in fact, you can have multiple people kind of struck by the same idea for the same book or the same project. Sure. I think it's no different to, you know, when you have that $1 million business idea and you don't act on it. And 6 months later, you see it out in the marketplace and you're like, oh, gosh, I should have done that. I love those moments because it's a reminder that, you know, act now. It's not this sort of timeless invitation. The invitation is in this moment for a reason. And I like to sort of think of it as a sort of cosmic agenda to get a message out into the world at a certain time. And I've always felt very connected to this intuitive part of me that just knows. And that sounds funny, but there is a part of me that just knows when something is right, knows when it's time for something, or knows that I've been called to something. And that was this book. And it, you know, in a larger way, it was a brand itself that I felt called to create. And You Are a Magnet, you know, I didn't even realize I was writing it when I was writing it, in a way. It was this sort of collection of all of the work that I've been doing for 2 or 3 years that I had been putting into this document. And I think there was part of me that knew and hoped for it to turn into a book. But the reality was I started before I felt ready. And so by the time that the book deal came through, right, that beautiful manifestation moment, oh my gosh, I've been wanting that for so long. I already had so much of the work done, and it was such a moment of gratitude to know that, wow, I had already started on this, even though the opportunity hadn't arisen or hadn't, you know, sparked itself in front of me. I still remember the moment I was traveling with my partner at the time. And I turned to him, I said, I'm going to write a book. And he's like, oh, cool. Good for you, you know. Really supportive, you know. But I think he was just like, all right, like, go for it, I guess. And then for him to even watch the trajectory of starting and then seeing, you know, an email come through out of the blue from publishing houses, reaching out, asking if I had considered a book or I'd been writing a book. So I think it was this beautiful kind of harmony with life that when you feel the calling, begin. Don't wait for the invitation, the external invitation to start. Just start. And the external invitation will arise along the way. And I think so many of us have learned that we have to wait for somebody else to come forward and invite us to step up. But what if that invitation came from within? And, you know, that's something that I believe in so wholeheartedly, is if there's anyone listening right now, you know, if you're feeling that invitation, just begin. And I promise you the resources will arise.
Such a beautiful, empowering message. Thank you. In your book, you speak about us humans being naturally magnetic beings. And you describe the emotional baseline is what we radiate. What would you say, or would you say this magnetic field is similar to the aura? Would you say that's the same thing?
Oh, that's very interesting. I have to think about that for a moment.
Sure.
It does feel similar. I feel like your aura is the radiation of, I mean, you're a beautiful person to speak to this about, right? Even your background and your studies is the sort of, they're both a reflection of how you're feeling and how you're being. The distinction, I think, with your magnetic field is it's very subconscious, right? I can speak to that more clearly. It's very subconscious.
Yeah, please do.
I consciously want, you know, that loving partnership where there's loyalty and respect and kindness. We can wish for that until we're blue in the face and it can still not arise. And it sort of reminds me of that concept I was speaking about earlier of then we use that to validate a disempowering belief. But where do those beliefs live? It's really beneath the surface, right? And that beneath the surface I refer to as the subconscious, not just I, any, you know, psychologist or, you know, anyone in this field will refer to it as subconscious. So there are so many studies to prove the power of our subconscious mind. So highly recommend anyone that's interested to go down that rabbit hole. But essentially, the subconscious is responsible for automation, right? So we don't have to consciously think about our chest rising and falling. It just does. And in the same way, our magnetic field is somewhat subconscious. We don't have to think about it. There's times where we'll come into meditation and we're consciously trying to become aware of it. But that doesn't change the magnetic field. What changes the magnetic field is when we tap into those belief systems that are in the subconscious mind. So one of the ways in which we can tell, you know, what's kind of lurking beneath the surface in a way is when you find yourself triggered, right? It's never the situation, exactly the situation that's triggering you. It's the way in which that situation is pressing upon an old limiting belief that exists in the subconscious mind. And so that can create those situations where we're attracting in these invitations of this trigger, right? Because the greater intention is for us to revisit that belief and integrate it so that we are not triggered moving forward. But so often when we're moving about our life and we're feeling triggered, we see it as such a bad thing. We're like, oh, this means that. And so when we go back into what's in our magnetic field, it's really, what do you believe to be true about yourself and about the world? because that's what you're going to see. That's the filter in which you're going to bring in information and the way in which people will even perceive you as you move about the world. We all have that one person that, you know, steps in the room and you kind of, oh, I'm on eggshells, and they didn't have to open their mouth, but it's radiating from them, right? Or when someone's open-hearted and warm and loving and soft, they don't have to speak to be heard, right? We're always perceiving these fields of belief from one another, whether or not we're doing it consciously. And so, you know, triggers are one of the ways in which we can take inventory of, oh, what are some of the limiting beliefs that I'm holding in my magnetic field? And then on the flip side of that, let's look at the positive beliefs, right? What comes easily to you? What is just so natural? Do you always have great friendships in your life? You know, do you always have great relationships? Are you fantastic at work? And that feels really flowy. That's a signal of, oh, I have a really positive subconscious belief in this area. And that's creating these positive outcomes for me. So I try to avoid the use of the word good or bad, right? It's really just belief. And it takes us to an experience that's empowering or preferred or disempowering or not preferred. And you know, those kind of the triggers and the flow are a way of taking inventory of that. But I'm curious, in that description, does that align with kind of your definition of the aura? And I think that you probably speak a bit better to that aura definition.
When I was reading in your book, I thought, like, she's speaking about the aura with the magnetic field. That's what I honestly thought, because the aura is exactly what you say. It's the emanation of our thoughts, beliefs, feelings we're having. But definitely there's also, I think, a mix in of our soul essence, which you could also say is, so we have this belief that there's two sides of the soul, a part of the soul that does learn, that have imprints, but then there's a part of the soul that will never change, and that is like unchanged from any human experience. So I think it's a mixture of that part of the soul that is changing, that is learning, that has imprints of past lives, for example, or childhood wounds. And then there's a part which is like your, let's say, like your soul essence, which shines through all of that. Even though you're having these beliefs, there's still something beneath it that is like untouched of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but I feel it's very similar to the magnetic field. So I really love the term. And thank you for breaking this down. So the question that was arising when you were speaking is, would you say that the first step into changing our magnetic field is for sure the work with limiting beliefs and what is in our subconscious?
I always, you know, kind of smile lightly when we come back to that, because I know it's not the answer anyone wants to hear. And I wish that we could skip it.
But yes.
Yeah, but it is actually some of the most empowering or powerful work that we can do. Yeah. And it just so happens it's the work that we most resist doing. I always find that so fascinating. You know, I've written about that in the past, of your resistance is often directly correlated to how much you really want something. You know, so if you're feeling a lot of resistance towards something, actually it's an invitation to dive deeper and say, well, you know, what have I associated with that that's making me resist it? You know, so not to go down that tangent, to answer your question, yes, that excavation work is what's really the bedrock. And it's really the foundation, right? Even visually, if we're building a home or a vision for a home, if the foundations are not strong enough to build the vision that we want, that house will continue to fall or cave, or certain areas won't be supported. And I see that time and time again in the work I do with clients. When we try to rush over that inventory of, you know, what have I put in, you know, my shadow, right? This aspect of myself that maybe I'm ashamed of, or I feel embarrassed of, or I don't want the world to see. we can, you know, quite quickly find what's in our shadow by what is the thing that we're most afraid of anyone learning about us, right? Or most afraid of people believing is true about us. That's sort of what the aspects that we have in the shadow self. And those can be really painful. And they're often the source of so many of those limiting beliefs, right? Or the fear behind so many of those limiting beliefs. And until we turn and essentially face our shadow, it's really hard to build strong foundations moving forward, because we'll find those same themes, those same triggers, those same invitations to integrate pop up as we're building this new vision. So, you know, part of the reason why I started the book Alchemizing Fear is a, you know, lighter way of saying, let's dive deep, let's take inventory, let's become, you know, these conscious observers of our life. Not in a judgmental way, not in a way that we're broken or something needs fixed, but just in a way of taking observation of cause and effect. Mm-hmm. And I think when we create that space, it becomes less personal. It doesn't feel like we're sort of there's some defective model that's walking around in the world and we're just kind of waiting for someone else to find out. No, we all have this journey to go on. I've had the privilege of working with, you know, students of billionaires, of corporate CEOs, of teachers, of just so many walks of life, so many ages and so many different cultural backgrounds at this point. And there is such a shared experience across it all, right? Is that we fundamentally, so many of us think there's something wrong with us, but everyone else has it figured out. And I think the more we dive into this work, the more we realize that one, there's nothing wrong with you, first and foremost. And two, we're not alone in this journey, that we're all going through this, whether we're doing it consciously or not. So I just share that to kind of help lift some of the stigma with self-work and some of that more heavy work that we can dive into. But that's really where it starts, is taking inventory of what you've been creating. And perhaps, you know, then taking it one step deeper, one layer deeper to, well, why? You know, can I recognize the pattern? Does this feel familiar? Have I been in this situation before, but with different characters? Mm-hmm. You know, and that can just help identify themes and patterns.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. As I was contemplating about the title and the, you know, the threat that is going through your book, and as empowering as it is, it also brings us back to our responsibility, right? When you say like, okay, I'm a magnet. And let's say many of the people listening now, they have done quite a lot of like self-help work, self-development work, spiritual work. And let's say they have most of their limiting beliefs down, like, you know, they've done this work. But still, you have days where you feel shit. You feel maybe depressed. Something happens, a loss, a crisis. And on these days, you go like, damn, I'm a magnet, you know? Like, so how do you deal with those moments where you are aware I'm not radiating the most high vibe, and even phases in your life that just life brings? To bring you back to a positive mindset, to an abundance mindset, to gratitude.
Hey, du wundervolle Seele. Vielleicht wünschst du dir schon länger, überall und ganz flexibel mit mir zu praktizieren. Mit Yoga, Meditation, Ritualen und kleinen Momenten der Achtsamkeit für deinen Alltag. Genau dafür habe ich die Wanda Badwal Yoga App kreiert. Dein Zuhause für gelebte Spiritualität. Gemeinsam mit meinem wundervollen Teacher-Team findest du dort Yoga, Meditation, Achtsamkeit, Rituale und inspirierende Journeys. Alles an einem Ort, liebevoll gestaltet für deinen Alltag. Und im Community-Bereich sind wir wirklich verbunden. Ich teile dort Impulse zu unserem jeweiligen Monatsthema, lese eure Beiträge, antworte auf Fragen, ein Raum für echte Nähe und Austausch unter like-minded people. Hol dir jetzt die Wanda Badwal Yoga App und werde Teil dieser besonderen Community. Den Link findest du in den Shownotes. Ich freue mich sehr, dich dort ganz bald auf der Matte zu sehen.
I love this question. because I think it touches on something that so many of us, particularly in this more spiritual space, learn from old school manifestation, which is if I'm having a bad thought, I'm going to create a bad future, a bad outcome, a bad experience. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love the distinction of this, you know, new definition of the magnetic field, is it's not really as potent in the conscious mind as it is in the subconscious. So I personally operate with my clients that positivity, you know, without also acknowledgement of how we're really feeling, is actually just bypassing how we're feeling. And so that's not helpful. I'll just start with that, you know, even just addressing, right? If you're in that situation, if you're in the afterglow of something happening that was painful, that was hurtful, that prompted grief, creating space for you to feel what you need to feel, acknowledge what you need to acknowledge. One of my favorite ways of doing this is even just getting a blank piece of paper and a pen and writing out, you know, they call it the rage page, but it can be, you know, the sad page, the frustration page, the, you know, the even the victim page. Like, let yourself lean into what's actually coming up and addressing it. Because what's really happening in those experiences is our inner child is feeling unsettled. And so if we immediately leapfrog over the needs of that inner child and we try to jump into empowerment, it's almost like if you're sitting with a child and they're having a tantrum and you're trying to take them from A to Z, right? You're in this place of complete dysregulation and I'm trying to take you to this place of being in the best mood of your life. There's too much contrast to travel through. So by addressing and acknowledging, what we're doing is we're soothing, self-soothing through that experience, or soothing the needs of our own inner child. So always, always, always acknowledging what's actually going on. How do you feel? Let it out. You know, I am effing annoyed about this. I wish this didn't happen in this way. Amazing. Get it out of your body. Address it. Once we've done that, we're in a different, more empowered energetic state to shift from why is this happening to me? You know, why did this unfold in this way? That disempowering energy. We've kind of moved up the energetic scale. And when we move up that scale, more is available to us in an authentic way, not in a, I'll just keep telling myself I feel good until hopefully it sticks way. And so little things like even just leaning into the rituals that make you feel good, right? If there's certain habits that you know help shift your state, whether that be movement, whether that be a short meditation, whether that be calling your friend, calling your mom, making a meal that you like, watching an old movie that you enjoy, little moments can help lift again that energy up further. And so I think it's much less about trying to attribute meaning to, or a disempowering meaning to, well, I must have created this, you know, so what does that mean about me? And instead, this has happened. Let me sit with that. Let me acknowledge that that hurt or that was painful. And now let me take responsibility for how I can create something different moving forward. But that's not an immediate light switch moment, right? There's sort of stages that we move through in order to get to that more empowered place of, ultimately, to use your word, responsibility of, this has happened, I can address it, and now how can I change, or what's within my realm of control to influence moving forward?
Yeah, thank you for for clarifying that from your perspective, because I do think, as you said, that many people feel even like afraid about manifesting, because we are all the time manifesting. We are magnets. We can't do anything about it. And then going like, damn, I'm having a bad day. What can I do about it? So, thank you so much. And even though you are pointing out the importance to go down the rabbit hole of limiting beliefs and doing the painful work, what I also really love about your book is the practical tools you bring, and also the focus on love, the focus on joy, As you said, we're already having so much that is also positive, that it comes easy to us. So can you speak a little bit about your description, living in joy as a key principle to being that positive magnet that we all want to be?
Completely. And I think, you know, the book really is at its core about joy and is about tapping into that state. But it's almost like that light switch moment, right? If you're coming to the book and you've just lost someone or you've just come from a breakup, that's too far of a leap to get from that place into, I'm noticing that the birds are making this beautiful song outside, or I'm appreciating the way that my coffee tastes this morning. And oh my God, I made that so well today. Or the way that the light comes into your home in the morning. There is this journey in the book for a reason of, you know, how can we move through what needs to be moved through in order to make that state available to us? And Joy, it's quite literally my middle name. My grandma's name was Joyce, and my mother abbreviated it to Joy. And so I find it so fascinating that I feel so pulled to speak to it. And part of the reason being is, you know, there was a pivotal moment, you know, going back to my father. You know, he'd spent so much of his life in addiction, away from family, focused on work and focused on career. And there was a time we hadn't had a relationship for, gosh, I don't think I'd seen him 5 or 6 years. And I get this call from my grandfather that he was sick and he was in hospital. And so thankfully, my best friend drove me, you know, I think it was 3 hours to this particular hospital. And I went in and I sat with him, and he was unconscious. And I just kind of sat and I held his hand, and slowly he came to. And when he was coming to, all he could speak to, and I think it was also just the aftershock of, you know, going through that experience, but was the different work projects he'd worked on in his life. And I sat there and I was watching him kind of speak to these different work projects. And I just had this immense grief, not for me, not for our experience, but for the fact that he'd missed out on so many of these magical moments in life because he had been so all consumed by, you know, the rat race, by I have to do more, I have to earn more, I have to be more in order to feel good. And really the message of the book and my message that I want to share with anyone is that you don't have to do anything to tap into those experiences. You don't have to do anything to deserve good experiences in your life. And it's really a matter of just turning on that part of ourselves that can recognize those small, mundane, ordinary moments that are in front of each and every one of us on a daily basis. And, you know, I go through days where I don't see them either. Don't worry. You know, it's not a permanent state of being, but rather a skill that we're cultivating. And we have to so often be reminded of to attune ourselves to the magic and the delight in the world around us. And essentially, I suppose the message of that is to not miss your life while you're focused on some of these other things that we can become consumed by. So by all means, do the thing, live the dream, you know, pursue what you want to pursue, but don't do it at the cost of the way that you look into your partner's eyes before they leave for work, or the way that you're fully present with your child when they're doing something silly or playful. That's really the message of the book and what we're moving towards as a goal of finishing those last pages, of that recognition that we don't have to do anything to become more aware of those moments.
Beautiful. What would you advise, what advice would you give someone who longs for more alignment, who longs for more joy and love, but currently feels stuck in a crisis, like heavy sickness, loss, grief? How can they come back to the state of joy?
I think it was Maya Angelou who said that eventually every storm runs out of rain. And I like to come back to that statement that no matter how heavy it feels right now, every storm runs out of rain and this will pass. And these things tend to hit like waves. And when we're in the crash of the wave, it feels like it's never going to end. And hopefully this can be your reminder in this moment that it does. I promise you, I assure you. And out of the depths of it all, you'll emerge again and it'll be this beautiful, clear blue sky day and the ocean will be smooth as anything. And you'll even become almost disillusioned to the fact that there ever was a storm. And I know that can feel really far away when you're in the thick of it, but I think just appreciating that life moves in these cycles and that the waves and the crash and the storm, they're not negative moments. They're alchemizing something within you, right? They're cultivating something within you that I always like to see is the key or the lesson or the clue for the next chapter of our life. And so instead of seeing this moment as something's wrong, you did something wrong with you, what is the invitation? Sometimes it's just to be still. Sometimes it's to become more aware of something perhaps that you've lost touch with. But what would allow you to navigate this with more grace? And I assure you that that skill will serve you in this next chapter when those blue skies do return.
Thank you. That really gives hope. And I think that's such a important message. Everything shall pass, but also that our life does move in cycles. And I think something we sometimes forget in this linear mindset we sometimes tap into and we live in, that yes, we are all going through these changes and these moments of new beginnings and living it and plateau moments, and then everything breaks down again and something new is emerging. And I think it's really important to sometimes sit back and really watch our life from the outside and go like, oh, wow, you again going through this kind of cycle. And right now you are in this washing machine. And so I'm coming out a washing machine myself. The last, I think, 3-4 months of this life, of this life as well, but like of this year had been super intense. So, and I'm coming out of at the other end since August, something like that. But it had been really, really rough. And I really love the question you phrased about. You said like when moments like this arise, like, I always ask myself, what is it teaching me? Like, mm-hmm. What is the lesson? But you said something else. Do you remember?
Yeah. What skill or what trait would allow you to navigate this more gracefully?
Yeah. But also before you said something else about what is the invitation?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's very similar to like, what is the invitation? What is the lesson I can learn here? Coming from this belief that everything that's happening is happening for me. And even though it's excruciating painful sometimes to even in these moments go like back to a trust, even to say like, but something is evolving, something is cleansing, yeah, something is, you said, also like rearranging in my life right now, and that's the process I'm in. And even though it feels shaking, even though it feels disturbing, it's for some higher good. And
absolutely.
Yeah,
so thank you so much for sharing that as well, because I think that it's so easy for these to just feel like words rather than a lived experience. And, you know, it's sort of that narrative of it's not breaking, you're being broken open into something else, right? Something else can emerge from this experience. And, you know, I also think this is sort of relates to old school manifestation in a way of like, you know, you're supposed to feel good all the time. And I love that notion, but It's not why I feel like our souls incarnate and we choose to be present in the world. I think we've come here for the depth and the richness of the human experience. And part of that is a roller coaster, and there's the highs and the lows and the evolution of who we are. And if I look back on my life, every moment where I felt the worst I've ever felt or the lowest I've ever felt has been this pivot moment in my life, has unlocked a new perspective, a new door, a new pathway for me to walk down. And unfortunately, at least personally, I needed to hit that point in order to become aware that there was another way available, or it had to force me into that other way. And, you know, there's another sort of quote that I love from Oprah, is that life starts with whispers, and then it's feathers, then it's a brick to the head, and then it's essentially the demolition gang arrives to remove whatever it is that we've been avoiding moving, or avoiding kind of moving through. And so to that point, and to your point, that there's something on the other side of you, of that experience, there's something for you in that experience.
Yes, most definitely. So we are slowly coming to the end of the conversation, but I'm feeling we could go on for hours. So much in common and so many similar interests. So I'm really curious, Amber, what does your personal practice look like? So you bring a lot of practices in the book, which is really inspiring, I think. I really love that. Like, I'm Virgo ascendant, so I'm really structured. I love lists.
Virgos.
So you have a lot of lists and like practices in the book. So do you follow some of those? Do you have a personal meditation practice, affirmation, visualization? Like, how does your daily practice ritual look like?
There's a reason why I included, so after every chapter of the book, it's a practical exercise.
Love that. Because
this isn't just intellectual work, right? It's sort of, again, how can I compound action in a new direction, right? That momentum builds from taking action. For my own personal practice, I always avoid the use of my phone for the first hour or so of the day. You know, occasionally here and there, I'll pick it up to, you know, put my meditation on or whatnot. But really, that's where I start, as I'm not allowing any other information or influence to affect my trajectory for the day before I've set what that trajectory is. You know, we're bombarded by information nowadays. Creating this sacred container to set yourself up is such a powerful way to really set the intention for the day ahead. So that's where I always start. And sounds, you know, so simple, but it's something I really recommend for anyone to implement if possible, right? Sometimes it's not possible to fully understand. And then, you know, almost always will be a cuddle with my partner, kind of having a moment with him and being able to enjoy that experience and be present with him to start my day. That brings me so much joy. I'll make my little adaptogen coffee, light my incense, and I'll dive straight into my meditation. So I try to close the gap between when I open my eyes and when I close them again to meditate. Or sometimes, you know, if I'm doing my open eye meditation, I'll do that on my walk or whatnot. But there's a particular practice. I mean, I alternate between many different modalities of meditation. Sometimes Buddhist style meditation, if I'm feeling like my mind's really busy and full, I'll lean into practitioners that help me create more space and awareness. But the practice of meditation that, you know, I really come back to time and time again is this sort of hybrid of nervous system regulation and visualization. So what I'm doing is I'm essentially priming myself to feel the way that I want to feel before the day begins. And I do that through meditations that I have on my own app. And I do that through meditations, you know, that I love from teachers around me, you know, or hybrids. I'll regulate my nervous system first, and then I'll dive.
By the way, sorry to interrupt you. What are, because you were referring a few times to some teachers that really inspire you. Who do you love?
Oh, gosh. Louise Hay. I kind of go back to my OGs. Louise Hay, Abraham Hicks is another one that I come back to again and again. If you're looking for a little energetic boost, search up Abraham Hicks Rampage. Anyway, I invite you into that whole universe. It's a beautiful thing. She's very energetically tapped in. Tony Robbins for psychology, motivation. If you're feeling like You're more in that feminine space, but not taking action. I feel like he's a great resource for that. Ram Dass, who you mentioned earlier before we jumped on, also a beautiful teacher. John Kabat-Zinn is another teacher that I absolutely love. And Michael Singer. So I could probably keep going down the list, but probably the few that I'd start with that I think just have such strong, potent messages. Louise Hay and Abraham Hicks, more of the energetic side of things. John Kabat-Zinn and Michael Singer, more Buddhist mindfulness approach to how you can move about your life. So those are some of my favorites.
Thanks for sharing. But I was interrupting you. We're just speaking about your personal practices, and you were speaking about meditation, and that you choose the meditation that like fits your day, but you also regulate your nervous system in order to start the day in the way you want to feel like. So I'm really curious about hear about it, how you do that.
So it really is, you know, the meditation tracks that I've designed personally that I originally made for clients and now I have kind of available publicly are, one, we regulate our nervous system so that we're even able to tap into that subconscious state that I was talking about in the magnetic field. And then secondly, what we're doing is we're visualizing. The brain doesn't know the difference between when you close your eyes and you visualize an experience or if you're physically having that experience. What a concept, right? That's so wild to think about.
Right.
And so what better way to prepare myself energetically, spiritually, and mentally to create something than to visualize it before I step foot into that experience? And so that's what I do in the meditations is we visualize whatever it may be. It's not just, you know, future visualizations. It can be with the current relationship that you're in. It can be with finding opportunities to see joy in your day that you're about to enter into. And so by visualizing before we step foot into the day, we've sort of primed ourselves to have that experience moving forward. And that's, you know, a practice that I do pretty much consistently every day. And then usually some form of movement, some form of gratitude, and I'll try and get something kind in every day, almost this act of whether it be through prayer and praying over someone and sending that energy over someone that I know may need it or doing something for a stranger. I promise you, if you're in a heavier space right now, or if you're in a darker space right now, or feeling just like the weight of life on you, make it your intention that every day this week you do something kind for somebody else. And I promise you, you'll feel a shift at the end of the week. It's one of the fastest ways we can change our state. So just want to share that for anyone that's kind of looking for a little boost as well as being able to boost other people around you.
I love this advice. It's beautiful. And I think sometimes actually the American culture is sometimes a bit better in that. I wouldn't speak for everyone, but like, you also give this advice of like making a compliment during your day to someone. And even though, you know, sometimes in Germany, we like, you know, we say like, oh, the Americans are so superficial. But honestly, all the time or every time I've been to New York or to LA, I had very positive experiences with just meeting strangers. Of like just being kind, even though it might be not real, you know, it might be just part of their job, you know, of like being a good, like serving the customer, you know, but still it did something to me, like entering a shop and like being welcomed and like asking me if they could help me and just being super friendly and open. I always love that. And I really love this attitude, this openness and like giving also in the form of words, even though they might not come from the most deep, authentic place. It didn't matter to me, honestly.
100%. That positive ripple effect. We're all throwing stones into the sort of lake of life. What is the ripple effect that you're creating in your environment? You know, I always like to think of it in that way.
Yeah, I love it. So what would be your, like, let's say, 3 to 5 to-dos to quickly shift into a more positive, loving, joyful, magnetic state?
keep your mornings first thing and your evenings right before bed as containers to set yourself up for the life that you want to live. Read inspiring books, find vision holders, right? These are people that are living in a way that you want to live your life. Listen to their podcasts, read their books, right? Tap into that, journal about what it is that you want to be creating. Use morning and evening as these containers to really lean into that energy. That's one that I would start with anyone that's wanting, you know, quick change state. Two, gratitude. Becoming more aware of what's abundant in your life right now creates a pathway for more abundance to enter, right? So instead of feeling like your life is crap now, but one day it'll be better, how can we tap into what is beautiful and flowing right now? Even if it's just, you know, the fact that you can open your eyes and get out of bed, that's a fantastic place to start. We're starting to become more aware of the ways in which life is flowing for us and not against us. That's another perspective shift that's incredibly potent and powerful. It compounds over time. And I think the third thing I would add to that is remembering that this is compounding effect. It's not great efforts on one day every 6 months. It's how you show up every day. And the 1% today will take you so much further than one workshop day that you're doing at the end of the year or writing out your goals, you know, and for your New Year's resolutions. One decision, one moment, you know, one practice today will take you so much further. And remembering that it's the power of these compounding effects that really moves the needle in your life and what you're going to create moving forward.
Thank you so much, Amber. We're coming to the final end of this podcast for now. So what would be your, if you would have one message you could tell humanity, like you could say something to the whole of humanity, like what would you say? I know it's a big question. You can think a moment if you like.
I think I would remind people of that message that I shared earlier. You are capable of creating something different to what you've ever experienced in the past. And not only are you capable, that it is your mission in this life to create the life that feels the most joyful and abundant and expansive for you. And I know this because I've seen this unfold with so many different clients of ways that their life opens up for them. And we've all been gifted this personal mission to move forward and create the life that we want to live rather than the life we inherited. And it takes time and it takes a compounding effort, but you are capable of fulfilling that inner potential that I know that you know that you have.
Thank you. Such a powerful message. Thank you so much, Amber, for this rich conversation. There was so much beautiful in it. And I really love how you bring the bridge between mindset, intention, and spirituality to life. So thank you so much for your work, Amber. I really appreciate it.
Bless you, Wanda. I'm really grateful to be in this space and such a beautiful conversation. I could sit with you for the rest of the day and chat about life.
Yay.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for your time and your energy. And really, I also feel blessed to connect with people like you who share their light and really bringing empowerment and also clarity. I feel like you have such a clear and distinguished mind. I love how you speak also so precise about things and how you really integrated all of that, what you've learned and embody it and teach it. So I really feel we need people like you, who, you know, hold the torch, in the dark. And, so I'm really grateful to be able to meet people like you also through the podcast. And I really hope this conversation inspires people who are listening. And yeah, thank you so much for your time. And thank you everyone who is listening right now. Please feel free to share this podcast with your friends, with someone you feel like needs these messages right now. Please also review this podcast, leave a nice message in Apple iTunes if you love the show. So would really appreciate that. And yeah, we hear us next week. Do you want to say any final words here, Amber?
No, just have a wonderful day and definitely subscribe to the podcast.
Thank you so much, guys. Bye-bye.